You're listening to Bands and Botanicals, a unique podcast where trainer and trainee discuss fitness, herbalism, and healthy habits for life. We're your hosts. I'm Paula Kirsch, owner of Botanically Curious and artisan herbalist.
And my name is Danielle Kreese, certified personal trainer and owner of DC Fit. Now, before we get started, if you could do us a brief favor and go to Apple Podcasts and just leave us a review, we'd love to hear from you. And with that being said, let's start the show. Hey, everyone.
Hey, everybody.
Welcome back.
Yeah.
It's a beautiful day here in Southern Oregon. It's going to get warm as it is in so many places around the country and possibly around the world right now. And that kind of brings us to our topic. But before we get into what our topic is today, how are you doing, Paula? How was your weekend?
Good. You know, I took the jet to Australia for the weekend where it was nice and cold because it's the winter. No, not really. I just wanted to see how it would sound to say that. I did yard work over the weekend, and it was a very quiet 4th of July, which I was thankful for. For those that follow me on my Instagram, which is Botanically Curious, I posted something that I made for my dogs, which was a herbal treat in ice cube form and with Tulsi in it.
Yeah, so cool.
Yeah, just to keep them calm because I wasn't sure. There was an ordinance for no fireworks, but you never know. And yeah, it just scares the bejesus out of my dogs. So.
Yeah. Well, I think it also scares a lot of people now just because of fires and stuff. So we were really grateful that we heard a couple, but we really didn't hear too much.
Oh, nice.
Either. And we were, yeah, sure. Everyone was grateful for that.
Absolutely.
Yeah, it was kind of quiet around here too. I mean, we did stuff, but we can only be gone for so long with this puppy. So we're waiting for that moment where we could start taking her out to the world. I think she's starting to get really anxious too. She's like exploring a little bit more of the backyard, and like every time it's a little bit more exciting and a little bit more exciting. And
right.
I think she's ready to see the world, and we're ready to show her. Maybe we'll take our private jet to Australia as well one weekend. But what is our card that we pulled today before we get started?
So we have the marshmallow root. So we've talked about marshmallow, quite a bit within the segments that we've had and how fantastic it is. And I think it's great because although the oracle property for it is adversity, the marshmallow plant in general is a very hydrating herb. It's fantastic for hot weather, especially in a cold infusion, which is fantastic. The whole entire plant is edible, the leaves, the roots, the flowers. You know, it can really grow in any soil for the most part. A lot of the time it's used as a cover crop or in areas where food is pretty scarce. You know, it's just a fantastic herb in general. And that's why the adversity property is kind of associated with it, because it does just kind of grow in all kinds of different soils. It is one that enjoys quite a bit of water though. So it's not like a drought resistant plant or anything like that, but very soothing and, moisturizing to the body. So yeah, I think it's kind of interesting.
Yeah, it's interesting because it does definitely tie in a couple of different ways to our theme today. So because much of the North American continent, and I'm sure other parts of the world, are experiencing extreme heat, you know, there's a lot that's been going on surrounding that. We've definitely felt it here. I think Jeff was telling me, my husband was telling me, that somewhere in British Columbia, in internal British Columbia, it hit 125 degrees Fahrenheit.
Wow.
In British Columbia.
That's
insane. So we kind of wanted to talk about herbs that were associated with helping to cool the body, especially in these extreme heats, and help take care of the body. And then also, if you were going to work out outside, kind of things to keep in mind. And it actually kind of worked out. You know, we talk about how this plant, marshmallow root, needs a lot of hydration. And that's going to be something that I'm going to bring to your attention today, and maybe even tell you guys a couple of things you weren't aware of necessarily that come with heat and working out outside, and how you kind of keep yourself the safest. So
when we're talking about reducing the body temperature within ourselves, we're looking at herbs that are cooling. So when I say that, you can go back to some of the podcasts we've talked about where we've mentioned energetics and constitutions, and you're really looking at a lot of those. So why is it important? Because when you're experiencing excessive heat, you're losing strength in your body. You might be feeling dizzy, dryness, insomnia, irregular heartbeats, all of these things, especially if you're working outside doing yard work, doing your workout, because there's only so many days within the year that it might be sunny out, but now it's this extreme heat and this extreme cold that we're seeing and all these things. So you just have to definitely be careful. So going back to the constitution of our bodies, it's really important to know the metabolic needs that you have and your responses to heat. For instance, for me, and I always use myself as an example, so that way you can kind of assess where you are. I am absolutely drained when I'm in the heat for too long. Danielle's experienced this when we go out hiking or we're doing an outdoor workout and it's later in the day. I feel like I am swimming in a hot soup, like my body won't move, I can't do anything, and it just zaps my energy completely. And that's because my constitution and the energetics kind of within my body are already hot and warm. It's that pitta kind of thing. When you're talking about like Ayurvedic medicine and some of those where you've just got that heat in general. And so when it gets hot out, it's even worse and it exacerbates things. So cooling herbs are ones that really affect, you know, I'm going to be talking about different wording through different aspects of herbalism. So we talk about Ayurvedic and we've talked about it on the show before. We talked about traditional Chinese herbal medicine. So the yin is really a focus with that. And so when you're talking about cooling, it's affecting the yin. And so flavors and things, if you're not really sure, the first place to look is what you already have maybe in your cabinet or in your pantry and the flavors that you're experiencing so you can identify if they're cooling herbs. So cooling herbs are usually sour, bitter, salty. We've had a couple different events where we've done tea tastings and I bring in things like lemongrass, which is fantastic for cooling the body and also supports the body after workouts. Lemon balm is fantastic. Lavender is cooling, but you know, if you're using like a lavender or lemonade or something like that, you're just going to want to keep hydrating your body. Spearmint is fantastic because it's a little more dispersive. And so just like that icy hot kind of feeling where it's eventually going to be cooling down your body, spearmint is great. And those are ones that are most likely in some kind of tea that you've bought from the supermarket, or maybe you have some lavender at home that you're growing in your yard. As long as it doesn't have any herbicide or anything on it, you know, it's great to try to incorporate some of those. And anything from the mint family, usually even Tulsi and some of those other ones, peppermint is fantastic. We did a fantastic lemon balm vinaigrette. I shared that recipe with you.
Yes, so good.
Right. So if we're eating cooling foods just throughout the day, nobody's wanting really hot soup if it's hot outside. So incorporating those herbs into the dishes that you already have. So you don't have to worry if you're not a tea drinker to start incorporating teas, but iced tea is fantastic. Salads are fantastic. Putting it on some of those things. There's a fantastic recipe out there for elderflower champagne, and it's actually a lot easier than you would think. So even just doing something, if you're having fun parties now that it's warm outside, incorporating herbs into really anything that you have that'll help keep your body cool. Circulatory herbs. So we talked about comfrey last time on the show and how that kind of moves stagnation through the body. If you get rosemary and lavender and you make a fantastic like lemonade, so you've got the circulatory rosemary pushing things through the body, the lavender is calming everything down.
It sounds amazing.
Yeah, it's going to be a fantastic way. It's fun. It's something to do, especially if you have a little more time on your hands. Or if you have people coming over and you want to offer them something that's a little more fancy than just water, and then knowing that those herbs are going to support your body, it's really, really important.
So would you be using, because I have both fresh and dry rosemary and lavender. Is there, when you are making this lemonade, do you want one versus the other in order to help with the infusion, or which one would you kind of go towards so that the people know? Because I don't know.
So if it's something that you're going to be drinking right away, so if you have an event that, or I say event because I'm thinking business, but if you have friends coming over to your house and it's not so official, but you know that they're going to be wanting something to drink, obviously you can use fresh herbs. And so you just take, I think we did a video on our page of Bands and Botanicals quite a while ago where we took the fresh rosemary and we put it in the pot after it started to boil and let it sit for 15 to 20 minutes. You can do that with the lavender and the rosemary. What I do is I always do them separately. So that way, because Lavender can get really soapy tasting if you brew it for too long or some of those other things. And so it's good to do them separately and then get the right kind of mixture in there afterwards. But yeah, fresh is great if you're going to be using that right away. Dried is fantastic as well for right away, but it also works well if you are going to be keeping it for longer.
Mm-hmm.
It just helps with, you know, bacteria or mold or any of that.
And let's say you didn't want to, because I never drink too many juices or like lemonades or anything like that. Like, I feel like I would use this for like a little party or something that I was having. Would I still be able to, and this may be an obvious question, but just like a rosemary water, does that work as well?
Yeah. And you can, hold out on the honey or the sugar and just do lemon, rosemary lavender.
Mm-hmm.
And that way you've got the detoxifying kind of, especially in the morning. So you're already starting to cool down your body. A lot of people drink lemon water in the morning because they know how good that is for their body and their liver. And, or you can just do water in general. And so it's not necessarily considered a tea for a lot. It's just, you know, an infusion,
right?
But putting it in your water, you know, what I love to do is you can do like a lavender, you can do lemon balm, whatever you'd like, add it with marshmallow root, do a cold infusion, let it sit for a while, especially if you know you're going to be working outside later in the day or something. And then you've got the mucilaginous quality. So the viscosity of the water gets a little bit thicker. It helps to keep the hydration and the water in your body longer doing that. And that's a really fantastic way to just incorporate herbs. I feel like almost everywhere has a little apothecary or something, or someone, especially in Oregon, we are abundant with herb farms and places that you can support and get herbs in that way. Because I think marshmallow root is one that's not as readily available in supermarkets right now.
Right.
But, you know, lemon balm is easy to grow. Marshmallow root can be very easy to grow if that's an option for you as well.
Yeah. I hope you guys at home are taking notes, because I'm literally taking notes from Paula in front of her right now on my own podcast. I'm like, ooh, rosemary, lavender, lemonade, make lemon balm vinaigrette, lemon balm marshmallow root cold infusion. I have it all written down, but not really. Also still trying to keep in mind that I've done the lemon balm vinaigrette, so I kind of know how to use that. I'm not trying to be like just taking everything, you know, like Paula says, don't just listen to everything and try to do all of the things. Mm-hmm. But I know I've done one of these things already. I know that Paula and I together have infused rosemary for a tea or for just to add to a drink. I believe we've done it before. So I do work out outside every single day. So the marshmallow root would be pertinent to me. So, you know, just keeping that in mind, I'm not just mindlessly writing things down and trying to do everything, but kind of know that these would kind of support my body.
Right. Yeah. There's a fantastic tea I have on my website that has marshmallow root. It has rose, which is really cooling, and it calendula, which is fantastic for skin health and body health. And so you've got cooling, soft herbs. You can put that into a cold infusion, and it works fantastic. Also, it's got rosemary in it for the winter when you have a cold.
Mm-hmm.
And so I think I call it the cold and flu tea mix, but as a cold infusion, it's fantastic in the summer.
Yeah. Oh, and especially if it has that calendula, which would be good for the skin. I mean, you imagine that if you're sweating more, if you're greasier or whatever it is because of that hot weather, then you kind of get all of the things that you need to think about.
Yeah.
Dope. All right. So kind of segueing into moving outside, there are some things that maybe you don't always take into consideration and some things that may seem obvious to you, but are great to be reiterated. The first thing is that it's not always just high temperatures that you have to be aware of. You really have to watch for the humidity as well, because it's really that humidity that could lead to a lot of your overheating, from what I understand with everything that I've been learning. And it actually makes a lot of sense to me, because I've been working out here, and whenever I could get my workouts in here, it's always almost peak day. And the reason I feel comfortable doing that is because I did grow up in Miami, and I've been working out in extreme heat and humidity for almost my entire life. So I feel comfortable and I feel safe doing it here. And I also drink a shit ton of water all the time. But, you know, I work out here and I sweat, but I feel that sweat being evaporated. And when I was recently working out in Miami, and especially because I was working out like in the middle of rainstorms, the humidity was so overwhelming. I felt like I had jumped, like my every pore in my body felt like it was sweating. And it's because that humidity was preventing the evaporation of that sweat. So right. One of the best parts about sweating, and I know that, you know, I've actually, since I do sweat a lot, I've dealt with a lot of confidence around that and stuff, mm-hmm. especially in a gym. You know, it's been uncomfortable or embarrassing for me before, but if you think about the science of sweating, it's your body supporting you. I mean,
right.
it's your body cooling you down, making sure that your heart rate doesn't get too elevated because you are overheating. Think about a furnace within your body and it being unable to bring that temperature down. So sweating has its purposes, 100%. But the cooling down or the evaporation of that sweating is what's going to be important to cool you down. Mm. So when you, before you even work out, if you're not, you know, used to going out in heat or whatever the case is, always check the humidity as well as the temperature because right. they both will kind of influence the way you feel in your workout.
Yeah, absolutely.
And I know, I mean, I don't know about you, Paula, but like I could do the same workout in the winter versus the summer and it'll feel completely different.
Oh yeah, definitely.
Yeah, so being able to cool down and knowing how to do that is really important. And that being said, it's not just your external environment that you should be considering. It's the micro environments that you are creating within yourself. So if you know it's going to be really hot outside, I know a lot of women, sorry, the dog is barking a little bit. I know that a lot of women, you know, me personally, I'm almost always in leggings. Mm-hmm. I mean, I'm training people all the time and when I wake up, it's always a little cooler on our property and I don't think about changing later, even when I go do my workout to something that's shorts, but it really is something that I should, especially considering how hot it has been getting here, because that's a micro environment that I can control. If you're wearing really dark clothing, if you're wearing, you know, thick clothing, you're creating this internal heat in combination to the external environment that you are having to deal with. So light sweat wicking clothing is really important. You know, it's one of those things that can make or break your success, I think, in an outdoor workout. And it seems really simple and seems really obvious, but take the time to make sure that it's right is all I'm saying. But the main thing that I wanted to come to here was your hydration. Now, hydration is something that varies for each person because each person loses water in different capacities and at different rates. Mm. So, I mean, I could work out next to someone and it could be the same exact temperature. We could be wearing the same exact thing and we're going to be sweating differently, which is going to influence, obviously, the amount of hydration we need within our body, whether it's during, post, or even pre-workout. So all of these points of your workout, you could take into consideration for your hydration. One thing I do want to say, though, is that hydration status alone is not enough to determine if someone will be affected by a heat-related illness. So those heat-related illnesses I'm going to talk about a little bit later, but you think about heat stroke or, you know, heat exhaustion, and you want to keep that into consideration that it's not just your hydration. And that's why I brought in that concept of watching the humidity and also watching the things that you're wearing. Because you may be really, really hydrated, but if all of these things are working against you, then you may still be afflicted by a heat-related illness. So one thing is that you want to get hydrated before you even work out. I mean, we always talk about supporting the body. So why are you going to put your body into a deficit before you even get started? It's just going to make you feel kind of worse, I think, throughout the workout, and it's going to be harder on your body. So a lot of people may not, you know, I don't know, they're varying things. There's a lot of studies that still need to be done with hydration. And like I said, it varies so much from person to person that it's really hard to make a one size fit. There is no one size fits all in regards to how much a person should drink. But some things that you can keep in mind are you want to increase your chances of you hydration. So people may not have ever heard of you hydration, but that's just a normal hydration status. So the opposite of dehydration. And a way that you could kind of just ensure this, if you're not really sure, is you could drink about 500 milliliters or about half a liter of water before you go to bed. Mm-hmm. And that equates to about a common plastic water bottle.
Right.
Not saying you should use that plastic water bottle, but we all kind of have an idea of how much water that is, or we could visualize it, or we can measure it out. So that's something that's really accessible to people. Mm-hmm. So about half a liter before you go to bed and about half a liter an hour to 2 hours leading into your workout. So that really kind of sets you up to go into it. If you sweat, you know, you sweat, but you know that you're not already going into it in a deficit. And like I said, this isn't one size fits all. So just, you know, it's not something to be overly concerned about for most people. If you just stay hydrated, if you keep fluids accessible to you while you're in your workout and you just drink to thirst and kind of drink naturally, that's usually enough to offset the upwards drift of a heart rate because of dehydration or because of overheating within the body. Mm-hmm. So, you know, a lot of people sometimes, I'm literally studying this right now, and a lot of people sometimes may think that's not a good enough answer. Mm-hmm. Oh, just drink naturally. Oh, just have water accessible to you.
Right.
But it is, and it makes sense for most people because we may underestimate or overestimate how dehydrated we are. Mm-hmm. And just staying steady, mm-hmm. I would say just staying steady would be the best thing you could do. And also, you know, just a thing that you could kind of help yourself with, and this is moving a little bit out of hydration, is think about convection. So convection is the movement or flow of air over the body or over an object rather. And in this case, it's going to be the body. One way that if you really want to get an outdoor workout in and it's really hot outside, one way you could do it is by doing a workout that keeps you in motion. So even though, I mean, I think biking is really difficult. It is not something I normally do. And I think it's a different type of workout than just jumping or whatever. And that's what my body is accustomed to. But I do understand that when I am biking, despite the effort that I have to put in, I do have that constant air moving over my body.
Right.
And I may be sweating, but that is going to absolutely do something for me, opposed to just staying in stagnant, dry, or humid air without any of that flow. Mm-hmm. So if you are insistent on doing a really hard workout, or not a really hard workout, but just a workout in really high heat or really high humidity, maybe that's something you could keep in mind and just kind of have that air moving over you. And just remember, increased temperatures will increase your rate of sweat evaporation, and decreased humidity will increase your rate of sweat evaporation. So that humidity, I keep coming back to it because it really wasn't, even though I felt it, it wasn't something I had actually like really thought about.
Right.
And I did notice it in Miami so recently, like literally last weekend, but I didn't think about it in this capacity of it not having that ability to evaporate my sweat. I don't know. I just didn't think about what was actually happening and why I felt like I was sweating so insanely. But all of those things are just some things to keep in mind.
Yeah, absolutely. One of the things that a lot of people hear when they're working with herbs, especially when it comes to heat, is, oh, well, all of the countries that are near the equator have really spicy foods because it helps you cool down, right? Well, that's where this humidity and this dry heat and some of these things really play a part, because there's definitely layers to an answer like that.
Mm-hmm.
Because yes, herbs that are like circulatory, that move things through the body, help you sweat, will cool you down because it's helping you sweat. But in the same capacity, if you're not already focused on what your energetics are, if there's humidity in the air, if you're actually going to be able to sweat, what you're wearing, all of these other factors come into play. And so that's why I'm not going to be talking about hot herbs today. You know, one of the things that I like to talk about with hibiscus in general, that's cooling down the body temperature, maintaining a low body core temperature, which is really important. So preventing stroke, exhaustion, some of the things, muscle cramping, which is really, really important when you are going into a workout. And raspberry leaf is fantastic. These are really great for women as well. You know, these are adaptogenic herbs, ones that have magnesium, potassium, iron, B complex. So anytime you research anything where, what vitamins do I need? What vitamins might I be deficient in? Which ones should I make sure I have enough of when I'm working out? Magnesium, potassium, iron, B complex, especially for women, are really, really important. So it's summertime here in the northern half of the globe, right? When the US here, and it's probably a time where maybe it's bikini season for you. I'm not going to sit there and, even though we've made great strides in women empowerment and all these things, and pretend like women aren't worried about their beach body. There's literally tons of marketing still out there about it. So you might not be eating as much fruits right now because maybe you're on a keto thing, or you might not be eating as much this or that or the other thing. So it's going to be really hard for you to get your vitamins and some of those minerals and things you need, especially when you're sweating so often and getting those out of your body. So herbs are a fantastic low calorie way to do that. Not like I need to sell it, but if I was, that's a great pitch right there. Dandelion is one of those ones that is going to get water out of your body. So it seems counterintuitive, but it's circulatory. So if you know that you have poor circulation, you know, and this happens to older people a lot of the time, we always say that older people need to stay out of the heat because it's dangerous for them. Well, it has a lot to do with the way that their body is able to regulate heat and temperature because it have how it circulates. So sometimes things like dandelion can help, and it's a great way to add into a tea that has, you're already drinking and you're making sure you're getting that hydration in there, but you're also getting that iron and potassium and some of those things that you might be sweating out eventually throughout the day or throughout the week. And so just reincorporating some of those vitamins and minerals is really, really important. So the ginger that you would find in a lot of the teas in the grocery store is something that people use often for digestion. Well, I would encourage you to, especially for the heat, if you're somebody who already has a really high body temperature and heat bothers you a lot of the time, to switch to mint, which is a lot more cooling, but also supports the digestive system. And, you know, it also helps with inducing sweat to help break fevers and things like that. So you can trade some of your herbs in to get the same benefits that you need for whatever you might be looking for, but also looking at just that heat in general. Some of the ways to use these, we talked about like iced teas, foot baths, things like that. When at the end of the day, or maybe in the morning, you can even do a cooling like foot bath where you're just, anytime you put your feet in cold water, you're helping to reduce your body temperature a lot of the time. But also you can add a little rose into that or some other herb to help just continuously cool and also soothe the skin on your feet. Oh, you know, fantastic thing, especially if you've been working out. I don't think people pay enough attention to their feet for the most part, besides pedicures. Soaking your feet is a fantastic way to just support your health.
Yeah. I mean, speaking of those things that are going to support you and help cool you down, there are some things to keep aware of. And Paul has mentioned a couple of these already, but there's kind of a spectrum of heat illness, I guess you could say, or an evolution of it happening. And if you could catch it early, then that's going to be your best bet. If you do start to feel bad, because it could get quite dangerous if you don't address it. So heat cramps, I remember hearing Paula talking about this earlier, painful muscle contractions, that muscle may feel firm, may have pain, spasms. And even if you have a normal body temperature, you could still be feeling this. So don't always gauge it based on how your internal body temperature may be reflecting how you're feeling. Mm. So watch those heat cramps. Then you could lead into exercise associated collapse. So I know that, I mean, I feel like you were just talking about feeling really almost delusional.
Right.
I've definitely been in a space working out when I was younger, working out in Miami, in that humidity when I couldn't cool down, where all of a sudden you have that feeling of lightheadedness or you feel really faint. This could happen, you know, after like going really hard and then kind of stopping pretty immediately. It could happen, you know, when you stand up too quickly, you went hard, and then you're doing some ab work or something on the floor at the end, and you just get up and you just get that head rush. That's something to kind of watch for, and that's an indication. Now, remember, all of these things are your body giving you feedback. So not just things that you should brush off because you feel weak or you feel like, oh God, I have to perform a certain way. This is your body directly talking to you.
Especially if you're in a group workout and you feel that pressure of having to keep up with others around you.
Or group sports. I mean, especially, 100% though. I mean, it's, you have to listen to yourself, because then what are you going to do for your team if it gets even worse, or for yourself if it gets even worse? Then you could go into heat exhaustion, and that kind of will lead into that heat stroke. But heat exhaustion is when your body temperature can get as high as 104 degrees. You have heavy sweating, muscle cramps, fatigue, weakness, dizziness, headaches, fainting, nausea, vomiting. You may have really dark urine. So that's kind of like a pretty popular way to see how hydrated you are, is that urine test. Fun fact, it was actually supposed to be done where you pee into a completely clear container, because the water that's within the toilet can kind of dilute it even a little bit and kind of make it a little bit harder to read. Mm-hmm. But obviously most people aren't carrying a pee container around with them. So just, you know,
most people,
I mean, I know some on those long road trips, especially guys, they just have their pee bottle. Could tell some stories about that. Not personal, thank goodness. But some more, I mean, horror stories that I've heard from other people not knowing that
they were
grabbing the pee bottle because maybe they were visiting their partner and then, you know, they don't drink the pee, but let's say it's just a pee bottle.
Close,
yeah. It's pretty close. But, you know, you may even have cool, moist skin, but unheated treat exhaustion could lead to heat stroke. So that's when things get really dangerous. It's when your body goes above 104 degrees. I mean, imagine when you have a fever, that's almost the point that you send yourself to the hospital. I mean, that's not a point that you joke around. You could have seizures. You could be left unconscious. With heat stroke, though, something to keep in mind is that you may have dry, hot skin. So you may not feel like you're sweating a lot because your body is not able to cool itself down. So it's not having that reaction. So don't think, you know, you have to be kind of like sweating profusely in order to be affected by a heat-related illness.
Absolutely.
You know, a weak pulse is something to also watch for. Maybe some disorientation, just like you were talking about, that delusion where you can't really, your mind feels slow,
right,
or whatever. But definitely things to think about because that's going to affect your kidneys, which could lead to, I mean, even more devastating long-term, if not fatal, results.
Absolutely. Yeah. Kidneys, liver, all of those things that you need to support in your body. And hopefully you've listened to some of the other episodes we've had where we've talked about how to support that. You know, segueing into that, milk thistle is fantastic. We've talked about how well it does for liver support, how it's used a lot of the time for cirrhosis. But for those who are particularly going through menopause, who are experiencing night sweats in the winter, and now you're in the summer, I'm in my early 30s and I unfortunately, you know, I said I have a really hot body temperature in general. We picked the worst bed imaginable that just holds on to my heat. So night sweats are a huge thing for me. And milk thistle is fantastic, supporting your hormones, digestion, your liver, all of those things on top of making sure that you're just getting a cooler night's sleep. So it's, you know, you're maybe not waking up as often at night. Those night sweats might go away after a while after incorporating milk thistle. So if you sweat at night, if you're going through menopause particularly, and you want some kind of relief at night in particular, that's a fantastic one. And I would just suggest really looking at where you are, where your body is, what the needs are that you have, and making sure you're just supporting yourself, and always reach out to us if you have any questions, because we love hearing from you.
Yeah, 100%. Couple last things, like think about what time of day you're working out. 10 a.m. to about 3 p.m. could be kind of like those hottest hours of the day. It's always interesting here. I'm so used to thinking that noon is the hottest point of the day, but
right. It
really is kind of around that 2 to 3 mark that I feel gets like quite hot here in the valley.
Right.
And also kind of something we always talk about is meeting your body where it is on that day. We talk about it with herbs and we talk about it with workouts if you have injuries, but it also has to do with where you are and what the temperature is. Mm-hmm. I mean, just like you could be open to changing your workouts if you're feeling really exhausted or something's feeling a little strained one day, have that same accessibility and fluidity when it comes to the temperatures of the environments around you. If you are not used to or accustomed to working out outside and in heat, then maybe on that day you either go to a gym or you just scale your workout to meet the environment and the place that you're in. It doesn't mean that you don't have to move, but maybe instead of a really long run, maybe you do sprint intervals, but then you have walking intervals so your body has an opportunity to cool down. Maybe you do like a really delicious, amazing, nourishing, supportive yoga workout instead of kind of a more exasperated HIIT workout just for that day. I mean, one, you should be doing that anyways and incorporating different ways of movement into your routine. At least that's my opinion. Two, you know, you're still going to be able to move, but you may not feel so overwhelmed and your body may not feel so overwhelmed with trying to cool down in that extreme heat. So just like Paula said, listen to your body, listen to your environment, stay safe.
Right.
and just be careful, but have, you know, have fun. And this is all for you. This is all to support you.
Absolutely. So with that, I think we've wrapped up for today. A few herbs, a few things to think about when you're getting out into that heat. So stay cool, stay safe, and we will see you next time.
Stay cool. Peace and love.
Or topics discussed during this podcast should not be a replacement for any type of medical advice. Although Danielle is a certified trainer and I have a knowledge of herbal medicine, any decision to incorporate an exercise or herbal remedy is always your own.